This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Coming up in about 25 minutes, I'm going to talk with one of the most inspiring people that you'll have ever heard. Considering the fight this young woman is in the midst of and the spirit she has, it's a story you are not going to want to miss. 25 minutes from now, right after our bottom of the hour news. Got some horrible news this weekend. Horrible news.
What's that?
The forces of political correctness once again are destroying some of the best comedy in America.
Who?
Apu.
Who?
Apu.
Bless you.
Wait. The owner of the Quickie Mart on The Simpsons.
Oh.
The Simpsons announced over the weekend that they're writing Apu, who is voiced by Hank Azaria, out of the show because this all started with a guy who he says that he was a comedian, a stand-up comic, and he has a real problem with the stereotype of Apu, the Indian Quickie Mart owner on The Simpsons. And this guy put together his name is Adi Shankar. And he put together months ago, it might have been over a year ago when I first talked about it, a video called The Problem with Apu.
I hate Apu. And because of that, I dislike The Simpsons.
The whole series.
Yeah.
I love The Simpsons because...
You hate yourself. My name is Hari Kondabolu. I've had a great career filled with laughter, critical acclaim. I should be completely happy, but there's still one man who haunts me. Apu Nahasapimapetilon.
Okay. Now, The Simpsons, it's gone, it's not as strong anymore. But from seasons 3 through, I don't know, 10, 12, it was maybe the best comedy writing in the history of television. And Apu was one of the many characters.
Thank you for coming. I'll see you in hell.
All right.
You see, whether igloo, hut, or lean-to, or a geodesic dome, there's no structure I have been to which I'd rather call my home.
Hello!
When I first arrived, you were all such jerks, but now I've come to love your quirks. Maggie with her eyes so bright, Marge with hair by Frank Lloyd Wright, Lisa can philosophize, Bart's adept at spinning lies, Homer's a delightful fella, sorry about the salmonella.
That's okay.
Okay, so Apu has been a character on Simpsons for, I think they've been around for almost 30 years now, The Simpsons. And multiple sources have confirmed that after backlash, primarily from this one guy, that they're writing Apu out of the show, and they haven't announced how they're doing it yet.
Did you see, though, that the executive producers of the producer of The Simpsons just weighed in last night and said, this guy's not a producer on The Simpsons. I wish him the best, but he does not speak for our show.
But they say IndieWire reports multiple sources have now confirmed. So who knows? But Hank Azaria, who voices Apu, because he has to say certain things so he can stay part of the cool crowd in Hollywood, he said that he would stop voicing the character if people are that upset about it.
He said he wanted to see Indian or South Asian writers in the room, not in a token way, but genuinely informing whatever new direction this character might take.
You know, it's like the... Did you know what Jenna Bush Hager said over the weekend?
No.
Okay.
I was busy having fun. What'd she say?
She was talking about Megyn Kelly. And Megyn Kelly, who got fired late last week, for a rather silly comment, Megyn Kelly said. What she said, do you have the Megyn Kelly sound? Okay.
It wasn't just silly. I think it was highly offensive to many people.
No. It wasn't that.
Yeah, it was.
No, it wasn't. Of that, I'm certain. But here's what Megyn Kelly said.
But what is racist? Because truly, you do get in trouble if you are a white person who puts on blackface for Halloween, or a black person who puts on whiteface for Halloween. When I was a kid, that was okay as long as you were dressing up as like a character.
Okay, when she said, when I was a kid, blackface was okay as long as you were dressing up as a character.
And I think there are many people who were saying, when were you a kid? Because we don't remember that time.
But is what she said, and then, you know, we talked to him, right? Jimmy Kimmel actually wore blackface
and
did a black man's voice.
Horrible.
But no, nobody has any problem with that, and all the Hollywood cognizance, and he go on his show. So anyway, over the weekend, you got the Jenna Bush, the daughter of George W. Bush. And she said this with Hoda Kotb.
Well, it was, you know, horrifying because it wasn't what we were there to talk about. And obviously, you know, in this day.
Okay. So, and she goes on. But she says she was on the set and what Megyn Kelly said was horrifying. It's not horrifying. It's, it might be a dumb thing to say. There isn't a person in the world who was horrified by what Megyn Kelly says. And this
how,
guy,
but how do you
know? Because I know. Because
Dory, no, you
nobody's
don't.
Nobody's horrified
Jenna
by that.
Jenna Bush is allowed to have her opinion
she's
and say
not,
she was
horrified.
Horrified
by it. No, she wasn't. I guarantee you she wasn't. Nobody was. You weren't horrified by it. I know that.
Actually, I was really disappointed.
You might have been disappointed.
Disappointed.
Well, and, I accept disappointment.
Yeah,
I don't
and
think
I try, and I try to empathize with the people.
Horrified.
I try to empathize with the people who think it's highly offensive.
But nobody was horrified by it.
Well,
not a person in the world was okay. Horrified. That's a ridiculous word to for her to have said. When I was a kid, people did it, and it was no big deal.
But you're basically saying that Jenna Bush is not allowed to have her opinion.
I'm saying
you are.
I'm saying she's lying about her opinion. There's no way she was horrified. It's that word. And by the way, NBC has scrubbed that Jenna Bush. Nicole had to go to great lengths to get that because they have scrubbed it from the web. Because I think everybody in the world recognizes how ridiculously hyperbolic it is for her to say she was horrified by it.
Well, because she didn't act horrified in the moment. That was the
no,
other
she
thing.
Kept the conversation going.
Fine.
She thinks she has to say that days later because that's what the forces of political correctness are demanding now. You must have been horrified. Yes, I was horrified. She wasn't horrified. She is part of
moment,
that conversation.
And in the moment, the intent, like it's obvious that Megyn Kelly's intent was not to offend
she said,
or
yeah,
horrified.
She said something dumb. Megyn Kelly
dumb.
Said something mm-hmm. dumb. But this is Jenna Bush. She's the other voice in here.
But what is racist? Because truly, you do get in trouble if you are a white person who puts on black face for Halloween or a black person who puts on white face for Halloween. Like, when I was a kid, that was okay as long as you were dressing up as, like, a character.
And by the way, Jenna Bush, when Megyn Kelly's saying that, she's kind of nodding yes. She's kind of nodding along
with
her.
That's not very sincere.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Is there isn't a person in the world who's horrified by what Megyn Kelly says. And for people to pretend that days later, because that's what is demanded by the forces of political correctness, there's not a sane person in the world who was horrified by that. They might be disappointed like you. I accept disappointed. I accept that it's
Thank
done.
You.
Yeah.
I think you just should allow people to react the way that they want to react.
No, not when they're lying. I'm not going to allow people to lie about their emotions. Jenna Bush is not allowed to lie about her emotions on this show. She can lie about them elsewhere, but there's no way she was horrified by this. Now I'm horrified by this whole Apu thing. That's what's
okay,
horrifying.
Are you horrified?
Nah, not really. Okay, what's up next in the Fastest 15. So Sound Transit, they put in escalators. You go to Vegas every once in a while, Lisa.
Yes.
Okay, when you're
there's so many escalators that just don't work.
Yeah, to get to all of the sky bridges, like from MGM to New York, New York, and down by Caesars and you know where you like to stay.
Yes.
Down on the Caesars Bally's corner. Yeah, they have escalators that go up to the sky bridges.
Yes.
And they're out about half the time.
Yes.
And what do they do when the escalators are out?
You walk on them anyway.
You walk up and down the escalators.
Yes.
Okay, well, Sound Transit, they put in these escalators in the Husky Stadium station, and they just can't handle the capacity. They put in escalators that they now admit were too small and not commercial grade enough to handle the capacity.
I mean, they were just put in like 2 years ago. Maybe not even.
Yeah. At a cost of $20 million. And now they say, we got to replace the escalators and we have to add stairs because when the escalators are out, they don't let people use the escalator as stairs, which is insane because you can do it in Vegas. And anything you can do in Vegas, you should be allowed to do in Seattle. And And then secondly, you had to take an elevator. And some people were waiting 45 minutes for the elevator because the crowd was so large. And so now they tell Cairo 7 News.
What we've discovered since then is that we need heavy-duty escalators because our system is a 20-hour-a-day system. So we really apologize to our riders. We realize this was a terrible inconvenience for them.
Okay, so they are now realizing 2 years later that they needed heavy-duty escalators for carrying a huge crowd of people. If anything shows their abject incompetence, is it not this? They're the worst. They're the worst public agency in the history of the United States of America.
They're going to redesign the U-District escalators as well. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be at an additional cost.
Yeah, so who's paying for all this, I wonder?
We don't know the exact cost, but we know it's going to cost more than $20 million to accomplish this piece of the program.
And who covers that cost?
Well, it will be the taxpayers.
What? It's us? We got to pay for it? Oh, I never dreamed that was going to be the outcome of their criminal incompetence at the most criminally incompetent public agency in the history of the United States of America. So another $20 million. Poof. They can't build a train station. They can't build escalators. They can't do anything right. They're a $500 million over budget getting to the east side. They're a $500 million over budget going to Linwood, and they haven't broken ground on either of those yet. This is the worst public agency in the history of the country. Next up, in the Festus 15, surveillance video, more crime all around our region. This was in Magnolia, where, according to surveillance video, a woman was using a screwdriver to get past locked doors at a private condo and apartment building, and she had a child in the front seat of her car while she was using the screwdriver to allegedly break into these buildings. Cairo 7 talked with a woman named Lisa Walker.
That was so brazen. I mean, she looked at the cameras, but she just kept going. As you know, she just had a screwdriver.
Moving from door to door.
Extremely quick. And it was like less than 3 seconds. She just was able to pop in the screwdriver and opened up the door.
What kind of doors do they have that somebody with a screwdriver can just pop it open? That doesn't sound very safe.
They looked pretty sturdy.
I know.
Like wimpy doors.
I know, but this woman, she tried breaking into all the mailboxes too.
And when that didn't work, she went into the building a little bit further, up some stairs to look down the hallway to see if there were any packages. And when there weren't any packages, she just left the building.
And that's when they saw the sad sight in this woman's car.
Crazy. And then to see the baby in the car.
Here's another look zoomed in.
That just tugs at your heartstring that this woman is doing it and she's involving her child. And the child doesn't have a choice of that.
Now, by the way, that's horrifying right there.
That is horrifying.
I find this story to be genuinely horrifying. A woman with a baby, a little infant in the car.
Okay, while she's using infant. It was more of a toddler.
Well, yeah, but to breaking into mailboxes and condos and apartments. And Suzanne Spalding's a building manager in Magnolia, who says not her first time.
Incredible. Immediately recognized her as the person that broke in here twice.
And so everybody hopes they find this mom.
I mean, the video.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the video shows it's pretty clear. I mean, you can almost see the
yeah.
You can make out the woman pretty clearly.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah. And they hope they find. But I'm going to tell you a story in the big lead of two about that RV that crashed into the health club in West Seattle.
Yeah.
The health club owner, or the VP, he's going to talk to us at 2 o'clock. He can hand the people who are in that RV over to police today, and they're not doing anything about it. It's an unbelievable story. I'll tell you that one in the big lead of two. But they hope this woman's caught.
Hoping that people see these videos, and they know the person, and they do something about it.
I want to be able to sleep at night knowing my residents are safe.
But I'm sure we'll do everything to keep the mother and child together because they're family, after all. Okay, and finally, in the Festus 15. So you know that I have trouble interpreting any song lyrics that are metaphorical.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot connect the dots between metaphor and reality. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there are only two songs that have ever been written that I understand.
Which are?
The Pina Colada song, the gal wants to have an affair with her husband. He wants to have an affair with the gal, and then they accidentally.
You're not about reading between the lines. You got to just like hit you with a brick.
And I can understand the storyline that the devil went down to Georgia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Devil thinks he's a pretty good fiddle player. The kid thinks fiddle player. They have a fiddle off. The kid wins and gets the devil's fiddle made of gold. So I understand this. Anyway, Charlie Daniels, the singer of this classic song, I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to learn from you, Ursula, because I always talk bad about getting older.
I know.
And I
always try to tell you that we are lucky to be getting older, because many people would love that opportunity.
I read this thing about Charlie Daniels. Yesterday was his 82nd birthday. And he said, what are you supposed to be doing and how are you supposed to act when you're 82? Should there be an added degree of sophistication, a thicker veneer of dignity, with most of your attention aimed toward the weightier things of life? Maybe sit in a rocking chair and regale anybody who will listen with tales of the good old days? Maybe spend your days in a bass rig or on a golf course, indulging in some sedentary holiday? And then he goes on and on. He says, for me, I look at the next year of my life as another journey through the competition, hassle, hustle, bustle, fast-moving, and sometimes trying an absolutely wonderful world that I've spent the last years in. Half of the 100-plus show dates we'll be doing in 2019 are already on the books. I have 3 new CDs and a new book coming out almost simultaneously, with plans for my first novel to be finished and published sometime in the next 14 months.
Love it. 82.
82. That's what I got to do. I got to figure out stuff like that.
Yes.
It'll be this radio show.
Next time you complain about your age, I'll say, what would Charlie Daniels say?
Yeah. I'll wear that bracelet. I'll still have to do this show when I'm 82. That's what I'll do. That's horrifying, that thought. Yeah, that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast Stories, Fastest 15.
Good 15 minutes will give you the world. Coming up next, I really hope you have a chance to stick around and listen to a woman whose story I found out about this weekend, and I can't wait to share it with you, because it should give you a different, healthier perspective on any challenges you face. It's coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, over the weekend, a young woman who actually was in a sorority with two of my daughters, she alerted me to something pretty special that was happening this weekend, and it involved her friend Kate, who joins us here on Cairo Radio from Detroit. Hey, Kate, it is really good to talk to you this afternoon.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, tell me and my listeners, I know your story a little bit, but tell my listeners a little bit about your story and the battle that you're in the midst of here.
Yeah, absolutely. So in February of 2017, at 25, I was diagnosed with stage 3, grade 3 triple negative breast cancer. And it's one of the most aggressive forms of breast cancer. And then this last April at 26, I was diagnosed with stage 4. So right now there's no cure for metastatic breast cancer, stage 4 breast cancer, but I'm feeling great. I have a great team of doctors. A shout out to Dr. Peach and everyone at MultiCare and Gig Harbor and SCCA is where I'm getting chemo now. And I just feel so blessed. And so my best friend, Mackenzie, and her family and my family have just been great supports. And I feel so fortunate to get the care that I'm getting and to have the support of my family and friends.
Well, I mean, as I hear you describe that, as Kenzie may have told you, I have 3 daughters, all in their 20s, and I can't imagine what it's like to get news like that, but what a great attitude it sounds like you have.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I know. No one expects it, but I think we have all been touched by cancer in one way or another, so it's something that a lot of people, you know, understand, and I feel so supported by strangers, and then, you know, to have a day like I did yesterday just, you know, kind of brings it home that people are so great, and, you know, I feel so fortunate.
Well, let's talk about that day yesterday. So you are talking to me right now from the airport in Detroit, and you were back there for the Seahawks-Lions game, I understand.
Yeah, so Kenzie and I kind of have a tradition of going to Seahawks away games. So we've been to Cincinnati, we've been to Baltimore, I saw them play in Maryland, and I saw them play, we've kind of been all over. So Kenzie and I have a tradition also of doing something fun the weekend before my chemo treatment. So I have treatment tomorrow, and I get it every 3 weeks. So every third weekend, we try to do something really fun when I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
So she convinced me to come to Detroit, and I was a little hesitant, which in hindsight, I should always listen to her. She's always right. But she convinced me to come to Detroit, and we were talking about it with one of my friends, Joseph, and he said, you know, I know a guy, Joe Dahl, who's a guard for the Lions, and Luke Wilson is my favorite football player. So we were all kind of joking about it, but that kind of sparked the idea of coming to Detroit for the game.
Okay, but your expectation was to just go and watch a football game and come home, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Mackenzie convinced me to get first row tickets because we were like, if we're going all the way there, we should be in the first row.
Nice.
So yesterday we showed up to the game and we made a sign, and our sign said 65 plus chemo, so Tuesday will be my 66th chemo. It said 8 weeks of radiation, 2 surgeries, 2,325 miles or something like that from Seattle to Detroit, and then cancer can't stop at 12.
Wow, that's very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
So then what happened before the game?
So we got there early because we were like, we're in the front row. We want to see them practice on the field. So we got there just after the doors opened, and we put our sign up. And within about 7 minutes, Chuck Arnold, the president of the Seahawks, saw our sign. And he came over to us, and he said, you know, we want to bring you down here on the field to watch everyone warm up and practice. And we were so overwhelmed. I mean, obviously, that was unexpected. And he saw that, and it was out of, you know, the goodness in his heart, and he brought us on the field. I got to give John Schneider a hug, and then we got to watch them play, and we met Mike Flood, who's their VP of Community Outreach, and he was so gracious and wonderful, and so that was a really cool experience. So we were on the field, and we were like, this day could not get any better. This is, like, the best thing that has ever happened. I was on cloud nine. Just seeing them warm up and just watching everyone play was really cool because we cheer for them every week. So
sure.
It was a really really neat experience.
And did you get to meet any of the players?
No, we didn't. So we just watched them warm up, and then afterwards they brought us up. We went back to our seats. And that's when I feel like, a day that I thought couldn't get any better got so much better.
Well, let me play a little clip from the game yesterday.
Pistol formation, Russell play fake. He's going to throw to the end zone. Tyler Lockett is out there. He makes the catch. He's in.
Okay, so Tyler Lockett catches that touchdown pass, and what happens then?
I mean, we went crazy. We were so excited, and then we kind of calmed down, and we all sat down, and we were like, well, that was amazing. You know, we were just kind of like, you know, just like in the moment, and all of a sudden, I see someone reach over the bar and hand me a football, and I looked down, and it was Tyler Lockett, and all I could get out was, thanks, Tyler. You know, I couldn't say anything else, and he just handed it to me, and he walked away. And then he wrote on the laces, you know, the Seahawks at the Lions, and it was the first touchdown, and he wrote the date, and then he signed it, and he said, put God first on it. So, I mean, I was completely shocked and overwhelmed that he handed me the touchdown football. It was just amazing.
So you've been on the field. You have Tyler Lockett hand you his touchdown football. The day can't possibly get any better from there, right?
Exactly. That's what one would think.
Yeah. So then what happens after the game?
Well, so after the game, you know, we were seeing all the players say goodbye, and, you know, I got some love from Bobby Wagner and Austin Calitra, which was amazing. And then Mackenzie said, you know, my sorority sister, Hannah, is here. And then I was like, I don't know Hannah. And she's like, oh, she was a year younger than me, my sorority. And I was like, okay, because Kenzie and I have been best friends since we were 8 years old. So we pretty much know everyone.
Sure.
But I was like, oh, maybe she saw on Instagram or something that we were at the game. So we go over to meet her friend Hannah, and I give Hannah a huge hug because I still think it's one of Mackenzie's good friends. And Kenzie is like, well, I actually don't know Hannah. She is Joe Dahl's girlfriend, who's a guard for the Lions, and you're going to go meet Luke Wilson.
Your favorite player?
my favorite player, and I was wearing his jersey.
Oh, you were? Nice.
Yeah.
His Seahawks jersey.
I know.
I assume it was his Seahawks jersey.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, of course.
Yes.
Of course. Yeah. I would not wear any other team jersey.
So what was that like when you met Luke?
It was amazing. I mean, just for him to take the time out. So we went out back to where all the players were. And Kenzie and I were joking that we didn't want to take our jackets off because we were with all the Lions families and the players. And we were like, we're wearing the Seahawks jersey. We just beat them, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But we were waiting for him to come out. And his parents just randomly happened to be right next to us. So they came over and said hi, which was amazing. They were great and so wonderful and gracious. And then Luke came over and took a couple pictures with us and gave me a signed football. And he was just, I mean, it was really cool. You know, these are guys you cheer for every week, and just for them to take the time to say, hey, it was really, really amazing. So
I saw a picture of you and Kenzie and Luke, and it's just absolutely beautiful, Kate. It's wonderful to see.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, and when we were walking over to Hannah, who I thought was Kenzie's friend from college, I kept saying, this is the best day ever. This was the best day ever. It couldn't get any better. And then, you know, to meet your favorite player is just amazing. And he was so gracious and really sweet and took the time to chat with us. And it was amazing. And and then I was like, this day seriously could not get any better. I mean, it was the best day ever.
Well, that's just why. And I was, you know, one of the things you talked about at the beginning is you're surrounded by great people, your doctors and your family and your friends. And I told Mackenzie over the weekend what an incredible friend she must be, because it just touched my heart hearing what she was putting together for you. And I couldn't possibly be happier that you had such a special day.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I am so grateful for her friendship. She's just been my rock through all of this, so I feel very fortunate. Sorry.
No.
I get super emotional when I think about how much love people send my way.
No, Kate, you have me in tears here, because I mean, your spirit is incredible. I mean, I can hear your fighting spirit. I can hear your you know, the joy that you have when a lot of people would be knocked down, and that's there's some lessons we should all learn from that.
Well, thank you.
My goodness, it's a pleasure to get to meet you over the phone, and you will absolutely be in my prayers as you continue this battle and this journey that you're on, Kate. You're an inspiring person.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and thanks for interviewing me. It was the best day ever, so I'm glad I get to share.
I am too. Okay, Kate, all my best. God bless you.
Thank you. You too.
Okay, that's Kate. Who's, you heard from her. She's fighting terminal breast cancer, but had the best day ever yesterday at that Seahawk Lion game in Detroit. I got lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. If you want to comment on anything, I'm getting a lot of really nice messages for Kate, who I just interviewed. You can go to the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. That's 98973. When we put up our web story about this, we'll post the picture of, I'm looking at it right now, it's Kate, who's lost all her hair to chemo, and her friend Kenzie, who put this together, and Luke Wilson, who, what a wonderful guy. I mean, he wasn't happy with the outcome of the game for his Lions yesterday, but for him to, you know, touch the heart of Kate the way he did yesterday, what a good guy he is too. But got a beautiful, beautiful picture of Kate, and she's holding that football that Tyler Lockett gave her. So you can text us at 98973. That's the Online Trading Academy text line, 98973. In today's Sign the End is Near, a couple of weeks ago, I told you about a ridiculous protest in Pittsburgh against the fast food outlet Chick-fil-A. And now, Chick-fil-A, they were going to sponsor a charity kids run in Pittsburgh, because Chick-fil-A is, as a company, very philanthropic. But the Pittsburgh School Board has now banned and barred district employees and the schools from participating in the kids' run because it's sponsored by Chick-fil-A. This is insanity. The reason there's backlash against Chick-fil-A is because the son of one of the founders of Chick-fil-A believes in traditional marriage. The son of one of the founders believes that marriage is an institution between a man and a woman. As a free person in a free land, that son is free to have that opinion. But here again is government saying that it can impose its social justice will against private companies in a free land. And so Chick-fil-A was going to sponsor this kids' marathon, and the school, and I told you that this was coming a couple of weeks ago, but now the district has actually had a resolution at the school board meeting that forbids employees from even participating in the run because it's sponsored by Chick-fil-A. And I know that sounds unbelievable, that government could bar employees from participating in something like that, but they can, apparently.
Very surprised to see when they oppose Chick-fil-A as a sponsor for us.
The resolution claims Chick-fil-A supports anti-gay causes, so the district won't participate in the Pittsburgh Kids Marathon and Kids of Steel program. Chick-fil-A denies the charge, telling KDKA, quote, "Our restaurants welcome everyone, and we have no policy of discrimination against any group."
All of that is true. Chick-fil-A, like I said, it all started because the son of one of the founders is a Christian who believes in traditional marriage and has said so.
"We do not have a political or social agenda," unquote. Marathon CEO Patrice Matamoros says the school's stand hurts city children whom the marathon wants to train in healthy running and nutrition.
And here's the thing. Chick-fil-A in the last year in that area, just in Pittsburgh alone, has awarded $535,000 in local scholarships. They've donated more than $1 million to philanthropic events. And they had committed $105,000 to sponsorship for this charity Pittsburgh Kids Marathon. But, it goes on. Do you remember when there was a power outage at the Atlanta airport a few months ago? Chick-fil-A is closed on Sundays, again, because of the Christian beliefs of the founders who say, we think Sunday should be a day of rest. But they opened on a Sunday to feed people at the airport when the power outage struck. I mean, it's a very philanthropic company. But because of Christian views, the government won't let people associate with them. It's unbelievable, the tyranny of the government these days. That's our Big Lead 2 is next.